Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, Chiney and Golic Jr. The new show just launched Monday and gets simulcast at 4 to 7 Eastern on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. All hours of the show get podcasted, so be sure to check it out. It's produced by none other than our good friend Shannon Penn. You can download and subscribe to Chiney and Golic Jr. now as well as The Right Time wherever you get your podcasts. The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It's that time of week where we do an interview. Joining us now, check him out at theundefeated.com, various television programs. Darnell Foxworthy, what's going on, man?
Happy to be here. Every time I almost forget, you time it up just right to remind me of that name. Because like after a few months, like I forget that it was out there. And that was one of the funniest moments I had at ESPN.
Yo, I forget about it up until like we set up to do something like this. I'm like, oh, that's right. It's Darnell Foxworthy in the house.
What's up, man?
Hey, man. It's another day in the life. Last night, you saw your man, Tom Brenneman.
My man. Yeah, I saw it.
Yo, this is what I want to know about this, right? Because I feel like just about everything about this is pretty self-evident, right? Like, I can stand up here and be ridiculously outraged or whatever, but they pulled that man off his job in the middle of his shift. If nothing else, it appears that his employers are taking this seriously. I just want to know what it had to be like the moment that somebody in that booth realized that that went over the air.
Why did it seem like he didn't realize it? Like, his apology seemed like he was unsure what he was apologizing about. Like, it seemed pretty straightforward. I can't imagine. Like, it had to be pretty simple if you are one of the employers who saw it happen. You got to be like, oh, yeah, this is easy. It's not one of them tough situations. This is obvious.
Yo, I can't think of a time. I think except for maybe that time them two announcers for the Tigers got into a fight in the booth. I can't think of a time that they were like, oh, no, you got to go right now. There's no time to wait. No. You have got to go at this moment.
So it's easy, and I think I'm susceptible to it also. It's like you jump on and you pile on. It's stupid. It's blah, 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 blah. But I find myself moving to the next part of that cycle more quickly, like trying to figure out, like put myself in that situation or understand how someone could come to do or say something like that. Because everything that I say in private is not something that I would say on air. But something like that is not something I would say in private. like that is the absurd part, because like I could forgive somebody for like using a bad word or insulting somebody, using some slang to call somebody soft or something. Like I could imagine myself in a commercial break not realizing we're back. I'm like, man, that's right. Something I might do. But what I would never, like I just feeling comfortable enough, it's not even like he was afraid or he was in trouble for getting on air. He wasn't like, he felt comfortable saying this into a live microphone that other people could hear. Like, yes. There's somebody listening to it.
Yes.
That is what blows my mind. Because, like, even I could understand being alone watching TV and you say just something vile and you get down to a bad point in the game. But he was, like, conscious. Like, nah, I need my people to hear this.
Yeah, right. Like, that's an HR complaint, even if it doesn't go over the air, right? Like, somebody might go tell on you. Even if this does not go over the air. And not only that, it went over the air and he immediately just went right into top of the third or whatever inning it happened to be, right? Like he just went right to it. It was just like, all right, we gonna keep it going. And there was somebody in there that was like, oh no. Or did it go like this? They didn't think it went over the air. And then whoever's job it was to go through the Twitter account and look for who sent in a question for the next inning under hashtag Ask Tom, right? like they were just trying to get ready to get some engagement, you know, for the broadcast. And then they look down and they're like, oh, no, that went over the air.
Everybody who was working on that broadcast, their cell phone blew up, whether it was other people that they work for, their friends or family, like the whole room was probably shaking. Because all the cell phones were just vibrating. Because that has to be, that's the modern equivalent of, I guess, back in the day, you just had like a red phone or something in there to get into the booth. Like, this is it. Everyone can feel the room shaking because everyone's like, what's your boy doing?
Yes. Like, I remember when I wore that t-shirt on Mike and Mike that day, yeah. Right? And it really wasn't until like the second break that they were like, yo, everybody on social is talking about your shirt. Like, it took a while for them to realize that that had become a thing. And I remember how nervous that had people, right? Like, we got the calls in, right? The suits that wasn't even at work that day, they were calling in to figure out what in the hell was going on. And that was for that, right? Imagine everybody's phone that blew up in that moment. Like, what are we going to do? He's going to apologize right now, and then we're going to take him off the air. And they're like, all right, Tom, it's time for you to apologize. And he's like, oh, how exactly do I go about apologizing for this? And all he thought about was, I got to save my job, right? And so his logic on how to save his job was not to like fully apologize for what he had said. No, his logic for saving his job was fully apologizing to his bosses. It's like, I want to apologize to the people who signed my checks. No, 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 no. You could do that in private. You ain't got to do that part on television. You got other people you need to clean this up with.
Are you sure that that was his goal? Like, that seemed like that was not his goal. Maybe, I mean, I guess I also often assume that people are smarter than they actually are and assume that they're more logical than they actually are, because it doesn't seem to me that 5 seconds of thought that you would think the best way to save your job is to apologize to your boss. The best way to save your job is to be contrite and humble and look like a pathetic dog. Like, that's the best move.
Nah, because his first move was, I don't even know if I'm going to be wearing this headset again. Like, his everything for him went straight to just job-saving mode, but not the broader job-saving mode, right? He was just like, yo, I need to get this right with my bosses. Because his job, especially that particular job, ain't never been in danger. He's Marty Brenneman's son. Like, I don't know if you know that part, but his dad is like legendary Reds broadcaster Marty Brenneman. Like, this is who he is. This is why Tom Brenneman is in the place that he's in. And so he was just like, yo, I need to apologize to these people that have made all this nepotism possible. And that's all he thought, like, in the course of all of this. That's how little he thought about them other people. That the only thing he thought about was how he had embarrassed the boss.
Okay, let's quantum leap this thing. So me and Ryan Clark were talking about Quantum Leap, a great show. We've been talking about that a lot lately. So I'm going to quantum leap this thing for you. Let's say the moment after that happened, you get quantum leaped into his body, and you have to figure out how to save your job at that moment. Like, you didn't say the stuff, but you got dropped into there. Like, I don't think that the way that he started it was necessarily wrong. Just, like, I don't know if I'm having my job. But then what's the next move?
Honestly, I think he would have been better off just running away. As soon as they told him that it had happened, just get up and leave.
All right, let me take a second. So they quantum leap you into his body.
Yes.
And you're sitting there behind a microphone, and they're like, all right, we're live. Go ahead and apologize. You're going to get up, drop your headphone, and sprint.
No. Before they even tell me to apologize, just okay. As soon as they tell me that this has happened,
oh, yeah.
I'm out. It'd be like on the Chappelle on Black Bush. Yeah. I'm knocking the stuff over on the desk, and I'm running out the door. Oh, yes, exactly. Oh, no, I'm out. I'm running. Like, I mean, that would have been better off. That would have been a better play for him than given what he gave during the game, which, by the way, the part that we haven't mentioned is that while he's in the course of calling himself apologizing, somebody hits a home run. He's like, oh, deep fly ball, and that's out of here. Scores 4-0. And then we're right back to it.
I think you got to cry. You got to cry off the bat. You got to be like, look, I might lose my job. And then you got to transition from that to allow people to blame somebody else for raising you like this. Like, yeah. I'm sorry that I'm a product of this system, and I will do what I can do to fight this stuff going forward. And then you cry. You got to cry. You got to look sad like a wounded dog. That's their only move.
Only chance. And the thing for them is, like, one thing about white folks when they get in trouble, when they say stuff about race, you know how quick people are to pop up. You know, I've got black friends. Like, white folks can always pull a black friend out the air. It might not even, like, actually be his friend, right? Like, Tom Brennan might just be talking about how he used to hang out with Joe Morgan in the clubhouse, like, back when he was a youngster, right? Like you could pull out a black friend. Pulling out a gay friend isn't as easy for most people around football and baseball for the last 50 years, right? Like your whole life, that's what you've been around. You ain't got the gay friend that you could just snatch up out the air and that's say, fair. I got gay friends. He couldn't even get up there and tell that lie.
I got gay friends. The gay friends in my life, I'm trying to figure out, like, I think they're mostly family members that come to my life, because you're right. Like, growing up in the world of football, yeah, I'm not super close. There were gay people in business school. I'm not super close with them, but most of the, like, gay people in my life are relatives. So if you don't have that, then who they going to when you grew up around sports your whole life?
Right. Well, there's cats you could go to.
They have no value to you right now if they want to stay in a closet. Like right now, I need somebody who I can put on a poster. Like,
yes.
I need a simple, man. Like, I understand. Like, that's a funny conversation too. Because what if he has a friend that he knows is closeted and he's like, I need you right now, bro. Like, right, this is right, the right, moment. Right. You got to come out and let these people know.
It's time to stand in your truth. Or if he got out there and was like, I mean, I've got a gay friend. He thinks I don't know he's gay, but I mean, trust me, right? Like, because that's the thing I always say about the NFL. I always feel like with, you know, all the big discussions that people have about, you know, what if we have a gay NFL player and da-da-da and all this stuff. I'm like, dog, you think these cats don't know who's gay, yeah. Right? Like, you think these cats don't know they play with gay dudes? In fact, knowing some of them, they are playing with some straight dudes that they are assuming are gay. For whatever reason that it happened to be. But like we try to make y'all into such cavemen on these matters. I'm like, nope, now that they gay dudes in the locker room, y'all know who they are in many cases, and everybody's just holding it down for them and not saying nothing.
There is some caveman behavior where we make fun of everybody for everything. And I'm not proud of some of the things that I saw happen and I allowed to happen in those locker rooms where people would make fun of somebody because they thought they were gay and make jokes about like going to the shower. And whatnot. And then there was also the other dynamic where there's people that we also knew were gay and we held it down for them. And those secrets don't get out. So that I'm proud of. I go back to this all the time. In college, there was a guy who didn't come out until after college. And I remember the jokes. And I remember like being a team captain type guy and being smart enough to know that like I shouldn't be making these jokes, but not being brave enough to like tell other people to stop making these jokes. And this dude was like national champion wrestler. And real strong and snapped a couple times and no one ever knew what it was about. He beat up a coach. He whooped one of the running back's ass and he just lost it a couple times. And I feel like we allowed that to happen. We not allowed it, except like kind of caused it to happen because he didn't feel safe. Like he didn't have a place where he felt like he could go. And that's what being a team and all that family stuff is about. It's like you got to be there and create those spaces for those people because it's a stressful time. And that I still talk to him every now and then, but that echoes in my mind as like one of the things that I'm most ashamed of. And when I got the chance in the league to like get behind causes, I certainly got behind it.
Yeah, no, man. Like this is, I imagine college football players, I think this is going to change as time goes on too, obviously. But like college football players, I imagine being a lot more savage. NFL dudes, you also got that other dynamic, which you just pointed to, which is like, I remember when Michael Sam was coming in the league and people were like, well, what are you going to do? If you got a problem with guys on your team, whatever, he's like, well, if that comes up, I'll handle that. And I was like, dog, y'all are forgetting. They fight at work. Like there's a different solution in that world. If somebody says this, you don't take it to HR, you take it out back.
And the difference between college and the league is like, obviously there are different levels of maturity, but you have separate lives. In college, there is only one life. Like you are all together all the time. You party together, you eat together, you drink together, you go to class together, you work together. So like there is no escape and there is no place where you can find your own little lane. And I think the NFL is slightly different. It's like, nah, you go to work and then you leave and you make a choice whether you want to keep hanging out with these dudes or not. So I feel like the NFL in some ways is more equipped to handle that than college is.
Well, Tom Brennerman out here wishing he had been paying more attention in the locker room, right? Hoping he can find somebody to come out in this. There is nobody to have his back in this moment right now.
All the celebs coming out for Ellen lately. Like, he need to find some people to come out. The problem is, in the same way that having celebrities come out to defend Ellen doesn't really help because the accusations there are not about you mistreating celebrities.
Yes. Like, yes.
Having random baseball players or people in broadcast to come out and get your back, that don't help you because your issue is not that you insulted the unwritten rules of the game. It's that you insulted a whole facet of society.
Now, he need to find the new Elton John, right? Like, they used to be Elton John's gig. It's like, oh, people think you're a homophobe. Why don't you beat Elton John? If you charm Elton John, that's what Eminem did.
That's a move. So did... I feel like there's a business to be made because that's what happened with Shaq too. And and Papa John. It's like, yeah, Papa John was talking this nonsense and started hurting their money. And they were like, you know how we're going to fix this? We're going to find the biggest black dude we can find and throw some money at him. And then everybody going to be like, oh, Papa John is all right. Because they found the biggest Negro out here and yes, gave some money. So, like, who is the gay equivalent that you can roll out there and they throw some money at him and then Bridgman is good? Like, see, we gave this money to right, Elton John, I guess, is the guy.
Like, where is yo Tony Dungy? And, of course, it is wildly ironic for me to use Tony Dungy as the point of comparison in this moment. Like, Tony Dungy, you didn't necessarily have to get caught saying the N-word for them to call Tony Dungy. You might get caught fighting dogs, right? Like, there's all kinds of things in there that could work. Tony Dungy would be the most useless ally in the world right now.
Oh, my gosh. You know you fell into some real deep stuff if Tony Dungy can't help you out of it. If Tony yes, Dungy's arms aren't long enough to reach down and pull you out of this cavern.
Well, Tony Dungy could pull him out of this.
No, he can't.
Except this is not, this isn't on Tony Dungy's business card.
That's right? What I'm like, saying.
Yeah, this, Dungy, yeah, this particular yeah, wing of things, Tony Dungy yeah, does not engage in that space.
Yeah, it's like when you call a plumber because you got some water damage in your yes, house and the plumber coming like, actually, this is a structural situation.
Right.
I'm gonna have to pass you on to my contractor friend.
Yes.
I ain't gonna be able to handle this. I thought it was pipes. It ain't like, pipes, bro.
This yeah, no, this pipes, one right here is like your house is flooded, but you called the fire department. And they're like, nah, that's exactly what Tony Dungy would do in this case. Tony yeah, Dungy would just pour more water on the flood. I don't see what the big deal is.
Oh,
like I'm a little confused. Can somebody explain to me what he did wrong? Oh, okay. Got
yeah,
it.
This is one of those rare situations where you can't throw the Bible at it, and that'll nope, fix it. That'll only make it worse.
Yeah, in fact, let me tell you, yeah, that was actually when Tom Brenneman said, I'm a man of faith. I was like, let me tell you what word you need to avoid right now. Leviticus. Now it's got the time to take this into the pages to talk about this. This is not the place that you want to be. I just can't. That lemon booty that he must have had, man, his booty must have just got just like this full on, like, oh my God. And I got to keep calling the inning, right? Like, we got to keep going through the rest of this inning before we get to the place. Like, did they tell him during the inning that it had happened, or did they wait until it was over?
Oh my gosh. So how did they finish this? Did he finish the game?
Oh no. Oh no.
So who stepped in?
Apparently another dude that works on the broadcast was there. And then okay, a guy who works on the pre and post game show. Cause that was my question. They hit, like, I didn't think about there being a guy that was there, you know, for the pregame show or whatever. But I just imagine them on the phone being like, how fast can you get here?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because look, if he's not in the building, maybe they have a phone tree and something like yeah, this, like just in case something happens to the play-by-play man, we got to go to somebody else. But if the person is not in the building, who else do you call in the city in the middle of the game to be like, yo, we need you to come down here and finish this out?
The NFL, I forgot how long ago this was, but at some point I remember the NFL was like touring with no announcers. Mm-hmm. And they just like let it ride for some point. Cause like they could have done that also. It's just like, you know what? We're gonna make a technical difficulties call and we're just gonna play this game with natural sounds.
Wow. I just like it, and like when you hear it and it's just dead silent, dead silent, dead silent. And then you hear that. That was the other part that got me, is that we didn't hear anything about what the conversation was that precipitated this happening. And I want to know what that conversation was, right? Because after this happened, I mean, I assume that he is not calling Kansas City one of, to paraphrase, one of the gay capitals of the world. I don't think that is the place that he was talking about. And I went and I looked on their schedule and I did not see San Francisco or Atlanta. So I yeah, do not know what, like, I like, what were you talking about?
I didn't even consider that. You, as always, done the extra bit of research. Like, I didn't even look at that. I just saw what he said and was like, this is absurd. And didn't even consider the fact that it also might be based on some inaccuracies, which makes it even stupider. You're right. Like, what cities are you talking about? I guess it's just any like left-leaning, liberal-looking city. Yeah. It's like, that's the slur you use to try to make them feel bad.
Like, how did it come up? Like, all of these things. leave me so incredibly confused.
All right, I got to take you back to my man Shaq for one moment, because I was thinking about Shaq as coming in to be the black friend that you can pull out, and that's fair, that's possible. But also, this reminds me of like what Washington football team just did, and Shaq fits into this category also. It's like, you know what? We can no longer allow a bigot to be the face of our organization. Let's make it Shaq. Yes. Or we can no longer let the head of a Native American be the face of our organization. Let's make it Ron Rivera and Jason Wright. So yes. In this situation, where are they going to find an openly gay baseball play-by-play guy? What's the move?
But here's my thing, though. If they do that, if we really going to go and make this happen in that way, like, openly gay is one thing, but get you a play-by-play man that, like, being openly gay and being apparently gay or being obviously gay are not the same thing, right? Don't leave no mystery to this. Get you a gay play-by-play guy. Like, I feel like with the thing in Washington, we're going to see what it ultimately turns out to be with Jason Wright, but they went and got a black dude with the same exact type of resume as the white dudes that tend to get hired for these jobs, right? No, that's not what I want here if you go get a gay play-by-play man. Don't get the gay play-by-play man that's like a straight play-by-play man. Right. No, go get you a gay play-by-play man. Does Billy Porter have any broadcasting experience? Bring him out here, right?
Oh, man. I know that you have a mixed audience listen to this show. So some people right now, I would have given them a couple seconds to Google Billy Porter so that they can appreciate the value of that. Because that would be fantastic. Billy Porter, he's going to be fresh as hell.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
He's fresh as hell in
I'm
the
just
booth.
Saying, if you're going to do it to death. You know what I'm saying? Like I told people, there's a difference. I talked about this on the last show, where when it was time to get a black Supreme Court justice, Lyndon Johnson went and nominated Thurgood Marshall, right? That's actually going a little farther on this matter than you probably needed to go, right? But they went all the way. They got Thurgood Marshall. When George H.W. Bush needed a Supreme Court justice that he needed to be black, they went and got Clarence Thomas. They were going for something different. No. Don't go get me Clarence Thomas right now to fix this. Go get me Thurgood Marshall to fix this.
This is going to get us off course a little bit, but I'm sure you know about Clarence Thomas's, like, political leanings.
Yes.
Prior, like, that I didn't learn about that until I was in my 20s, and it's kind of mind blowing. Like, one of my father-in-law's friends, close friends, like, went to college with Clarence Thomas, and said that Clarence Thomas, his positions were like militant almost, and black militant at one point. I don't know what the pivot point was, but he obviously went to the other end of the spectrum. And I was like in my mid-20s when I learned this. I'm sure you knew it when you was 12 or 13, considering the house you grew up in, but it was mind-blowing to me.
So here's the thing, my read on that is Clarence Thomas is from a little town called Pinpoint, Georgia. Imagine how small that place got to be. Pinpoint, Georgia. I think the nearest quote-unquote city is Savannah, all right?
So when a guy tells his girlfriend, like, we going out for a big night on Friday, I'm going to take you to the finest restaurant in the city. He's talking about the best restaurant in Savannah?
Correct. He's talking about the best restaurant in Savannah. And by the way, and given Clarence Thomas's age, a restaurant that they really probably not going to let his black ass into, right? And that's the thing. The thing with Clarence Thomas that people miss is Clarence Thomas does not have a high opinion of white people. Like, if you go check interviews with him and read stuff with him, his opinion of white people is not, how could he? He's of his age from Pinpoint, Georgia, right? Where are the, you know, people talk about how black folks, yo, man, we ain't got no role models. Where are your white role models if you're a black dude in Pinpoint, Georgia, right? His opinion of white people has never appeared to be high. It's just his opinion of black people is also not high.
Quick timeout. So I know you're going somewhere very smart, but I want to take this moment right here to point out, and it frustrates me. I mean, it's gotten to a point where it doesn't frustrate me as much as it makes me proud now. Because before, there was one point when I was like, hey, that dude over there, Bomani, is too smart. I want to be the smart brother. Why he in my lane, I can't catch him. But now I feel like we're on the same team, so I can celebrate it. So I want to take a second for everyone to know that we are on FaceTime right now. I'm looking at Bomani. I say Clarence Thomas. He pulled Pinpoint Georgia out of nowhere. He ain't even Google that. Like, that frustrates me when I'm dealing with you, and it makes me proud. We just know so much about everything. How do you know that this conversation is going to end up on Clarence Thomas's where he was born?
All I'm going to say is this. If you had ever read that man was from a town called Pinpoint, Georgia, you never would have forgot it. And you ain't going to forget this now ever yourself.
You're right. You're right. I'm never going to forget it. I can't wait 20 years from now when this is useful knowledge and randomly drop it on somebody.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Forget about the Clarence Thomas and the Cincinnati Reds. Go here and hire the Thurgood Marshall, a gay play-by-play man, in order to make this happen. I want to see how it goes. Because, see, the other thing for the Reds is, somebody made a very good point about this once, that we are in this super hyper, like, post-capitalist existence that we are in right now. And a very right-wing value, most of us would argue, is the adherence and dedication to capitalism in its most rampant form, right? Get this money however you can, right? In that standpoint, in the corporate world, the right wing has absolutely won, right? And in fact, a lot of the left kind of goes along with it, if they're being honest. But that's where the right has won. But in terms of actual corporate culture, that has become, at least on paper, right, quite liberal, you know? And so a company in a time like this, and you do something like that, this is a no-brainer. You know, like you said, one of the bleep capitals of the world on the air in your broadcaster voice, right? Because he's at that point where he'd been a broadcaster for so long that he always talks like a broadcaster, right? And so corporate culture says we have to deal with this in a way. But Cincinnati itself is a very conservative town. I would love to see a poll of like Reds fans, if you could get the honest answers from them, and ask him if they think this is something that the dude should really be fired for. And it'll probably be over 50%.
Yeah.
But I don't know by how much.
I feel like Cincinnati obviously is more of a conservative type of place. And then you control that city for baseball fans. Like, I think it only gets older and more conservative. I don't know this to be a fact necessarily, but I think that's probably safe to say if you are looking for some people who were not watching the DNC last night.
Yes.
You could probably, your numbers are pretty high if you're looking at Cincinnati natives who also don't miss a Reds game and care about who the play-by-play guy is. So, like, I think it's pretty safe to say that they weren't tearing up watching Kamala deliver some impassioned speech last night.
Now, they also got a fairly strong fan base in Kentucky.
Mm.
That's right there on the river.
Mm.
Yeah.
That is a capital of sorts, but not the type of capital that your man Bredeman was talking about.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying. Now, also, hold on. To be fair, now this I am Googling, and you can see me here. In 2008, Obama did win Hamilton County in Cincinnati.
Oh.
That's Cincinnati, yeah. He did win that.
Well.
Now, I don't know about the county next door. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know about that, but Obama did win that. So let's be fair. So maybe, I mean, I'm just saying there's a whole lot of Reds fans that are looking at this like, I don't think you need to do this. Like, the worst thing that could ever happen for the Reds is if you had some fans try to give some pushback. And they're like, no, guys, this ain't the fight.
In D.C. where I am, like, there were some fans who was pushing back. Wasn't a lot of fans, but there were some fans who was pushing back. I remember seeing on the local news, there was a guy who just had got his whole truck skinned. pardon the pun, but I think that's the proper terminology where you get like all them stickers and you put them on a car. He got a whole new skin put on his truck that matched the old Washington football team logo. And he was on the news talking about he gonna sue. He want all his money back. Because they changed the name and now his truck has no more value. And this was a black fan. There's plenty of black fans around here who somehow are not able to connect their own struggles with how this could be offensive to another group.
Oh, man, that's always the worst, right? Like with that, because I had a lot of black fans that were on me about it when that name changed. Like, they mad at me like I'm the one who did something wrong.
But why are you mad? I don't
know. Yo, you still go root for them. They're going to get a different name and you still going to root for them.
Yeah, so that leads me to the question, why are you rooting for him in the first place?
Well, that is, you know, with Washington fans, black fans of the Washington team, that is such a complex discussion on so many levels, right? Because I've contended that the underrated story of the Cowboys and what used to be called the Redskins as a rivalry is the fact that that's a rivalry in the city. Yeah. And the big part of why it's a rivalry in the city is all the black people who refuse to root for them and then root for the Cowboys.
Yep. Yeah, that's absolutely fair. There's a lot of black Cowboys fans in this area. I guess also is somewhat inexplicable, but you just hop on the best team at that point. Like, I don't know. Or is it just the fact that they were rivals of Washington? Is that why that happened? Well, I guess every city probably has a ton of Cowboys fans.
Well, I'd say that's the thing. Black people love the Cowboys everywhere, right? Yeah. And I was not around for when this happened. So I've been curious as to how exactly, like, was it really that they was just so flashy and fly with it in the 70s that it then carried over? Like, my daddy, not my daddy's from a place that didn't have a football team. But like he told, the Ice Bowl broke his heart. Like the Ice Bowl is the most heartbreaking thing in the world for him because he was a Dallas Cowboys fan. Black folks everywhere are Dallas Cowboys fans. And if you were in Washington and your local team is the official team of racism, which is what they were through the 1960s, basically. Yep. The official team of racism.
The logo aside.
Yes.
Yeah.
They could have been the Washington Wildcats, and they still would have been the official team of racism at the time. And so, like, I root for University of Texas, which has a very similar legacy, you know, in terms of race. But I'm at an age where that was never really, like, consistent, and I wasn't from Texas. Like, I think if I was from Texas, I probably wouldn't have rooted for them because my dad was from Texas. That's what I mean. Right. Like, I'm from Texas, obviously. But, like, if my dad was from Texas, I probably wouldn't have rooted for him because he'd have been rooting against him. And then I'd like jumped off board. But at some point, a lot of black folks in the city, they got down with them. I mean, it's your local team. I get it. Everybody wants to put on for the crib. But a whole bunch of them folks is like, nah, we're not doing that. It's kind of the same with University of Maryland for similar reasons, right?
Right. I mean, that still doesn't, and I guess you can't answer this question, but like, why do you root for the team? It's probably different for a lot of people. But for most people, it's like some civic pride. It's like, that's the name of the city that I'm from. And then maybe there's like a history of relationship that you have growing up watching this team with your family or whatever. Like there are some emotional ties. No one has ever, with the exception of the cliche about the secretary in an office picking the Final Four based on mascots, like at no point in the history of anything has anyone become a fan of a team because of the mascot. So why would your fandom be threatened by the change of a mascot?
Don't get it. Don't get it.
Yeah, it just doesn't make sense. But unless it's just one of those things where it's just like you wanna cover up your racism by saying it just means something to me.
Yeah, but I'm like, how are we racist against the natives? Like, what beef do we have with them?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't.
In fact, we got decades and decades, maybe even centuries of black life in America trying to claim that we got some blood from them.
I mean, I don't know. I'm looking at them curls you got right there. You got one of them DNA tests.
It is entirely possible. Like I look at the people on my mama's lineage, and I'm like, yeah, that could probably happen. I need to ask about that. I've never like everybody be so curious about knowing where they came from. Not me. I'm here now.
Yeah, don't do it. I mean, they handing those DNA tests over to law enforcement. Which don't mm-mm. you do it. I'm good that.
My brother did it. I was so mad. I'm like, I can't never commit no crimes.
Yeah. Well, you can do it now because once they got your brothers.
Yeah, no, that's like, we all done. Like, that's my thing. My days of committing crimes are over. One of them companies just got bought for like $5 billion, by the way.
$5
billion?
Billion. Sheesh.
And I'm just like, how did y'all fall for this? Like, I just don't understand how it is that people fell for this. And some of them getting answers they don't want to tell nobody about. Like, I don't think there's been nearly enough discussion about this. We don't hear nearly enough about people getting their tests back and white folks finding out that they got some black in them that they were not aware of. I am positive. Y'all ain't all coming back Irish, Italian, and English, right? It ain't all coming back. Some of y'all are getting back 4%. You know what I'm saying?
Maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like that's something that they would love to roll out. Like, there is nobody, there is no demographic of white people. Like, if you're the liberal white person, like, you would be proud, I feel like, to roll out and be like, I got 10%.
Nah,
if you're if you're a conservative white person, I feel like you would love to screenshot that thing as soon as you say something racist and somebody say, you being racist, 6% from Angola, baby.
Except, see, that's the thing you're saying, though. You're saying you look at it as 4.6% from Angola. Therefore, I'm allowed to say this when no. What that says is 4.6% from Angola. Y'all gonna say this about me. and that is the, I was watching a Law and Order episode about a dude who got caught passing. You ever seen that one?
Nah.
Oh man, this dude was passing. It was a fascinating episode because they got the perfect dude, right? Like he absolutely looked like he'd be a white man if you did not ask. And then you look a little closer and be like, oh, look at that nose, right? Like, oh, okay. You was out here passing. And so the plot was
that Babe Ruth.
Yeah. So he and his new, yes. Look, let me say this right now about Babe Ruth, since it's been brought up, because I think that people think that the homie Miro like invented this, right? Like the Babe Ruth is Dominican thing. No, that was a long-standing question about Babe Ruth being black. And see, in our day and age, we look at a picture of Babe Ruth and we're like, oh, okay, that's a white man. But if I showed you a picture of people that were considered to be black in Babe Ruth's day, Babe Ruth is black, according, like, at least to the eyes. He got the features. Yeah. Babe Ruth is out here passing.
Back when they had a more discerning eye for this thing.
Yes. Like, who? There had to be somebody, like, on the Red Sox or the Yankees that was like, look, we just not, the way we talked about the gay dudes, like, look, we just not going to talk about this.
This boy hit too good, man. We can't.
Yeah, man. We just going to hold this down.
And he can pitch?
Like, imagine if it had come out, like, in 1935 after he's already the home run king and everything else, and it came out, like, definitively that Babe Ruth was black. Like somebody did some expose and they found out that Babe Ruth was black. What would have happened? Like, can you imagine what the interviews would have been like with people?
I'm trying to think of a parallel. Like, has that ever, like, it's so hard to do with race because it's so obvious most of the time. Is there some other parallel where there was a champion of any kind that was like, but I'm gay? And then just messed everybody all up.
But that's what I was about to say. That was like, that's where I was thinking maybe the parallel could come, except like, let's say it happened in 2020, right? And it's like, okay, but I'm gay. But there will be a movement of people, a significant number of people to be like, yo, this is good. This is a big thing. We're moving forward, so forth and so on. Like, no one would loudly express that they had been hoodwinked or that there was some kind of fraud. If Babe Ruth had come out in 1935 and said, I just want to let y'all know I'm black, I don't know if he makes it out the building.
You sure?
In 1935?
I don't know the whole Babe Ruth timeline, but like after, was he already like the guy in 35? So you think he's the guy? Yeah, I guess you're right. I'm.
Hey man, let me tell you something.
What they would do, they'd be like, no, babe, you don't know. They would tell him that he was wrong. And they'd be like, no, that ain't your mama, babe. There was a mix up at the hospital, babe. Let me tell you, that's what they would do. And then they would go say it was a conspiracy that people trick Babe, and we got to defend Babe from these tricksters.
Well, he did grow up in the orphanage, so you got a point there. I think they found a way out.
They wasn't going to kill Babe.
Yeah, I do think that, I think you may have solved what this was, that it would have been necessary to keep Babe Ruth as he was. They wouldn't be able to sacrifice him at that point. And they sure as hell wasn't going to give him to us. That's the part that I had not thought about. Mm-hmm. Is that if you then conclude that Babe Ruth is black, then you are saying that the greatest player ever, to this day, by the way, right? Like you were saying that the greatest player ever is black, and that could not be allowed, so he would just have to stay white.
I could understand. That's how you ended up on that he wouldn't have made it out of the clubhouse, because you was like, they're not going to let him walk out and cross to the other side of the train track, so you got one choice. But what you didn't account for is that they would not allow him. He would try to walk over there, and they're like, nah, babe, make a left, bro, and then make a right, and then make another left and another left, and come on home, babe. You just don't understand. They got you fooled, babe. You know how they do? They are tricksters, babe.
No, man. Oh, Babe Ruth keeps talking about this. Wow. I feel so So I made a reference in the other show to somebody, and I don't like want to make it a thing, but at the same time, it's such a thing that happened. And I feel like since he don't work here no more, and it's been in newspapers, we can just go ahead and just like bring this point up and mention that, right? All I'm thinking of is how crazy it is that we look at this picture of Babe Ruth now and we like Babe Ruth is white, but Babe Ruth absolutely would have been black back in the day. And people like let it ride. Mike Tirico been kicking it for like 30 years saying that he was not black.
Man. I don't want to say that it hurt. I don't know what it did when he was like, I'm Italian? What?
He said he was Italian. What? And I, what? Now he did it. Now that was like decades ago that he did that interview, but he did an interview more recently where he just didn't want to talk about it. And I have been convinced that he actually believed that. Like that is what, like, it just felt like a Farrelly Brothers movie, right? Like they just never told him, and everybody decided they were going to ride this thing all the way out, and it just never came up.
So I wasn't like mad or disappointed as much as I was confused. Like the point that you're making that they just going to ride it out. Like I understand why maybe once Babe Ruth is Babe Ruth, why they might ride it out. Once Mike Tirico is Mike Tirico, why they might ride it out. But bruh, like, did you not have, what type of experience did you have growing up that at no point were you confronted with the realization that you ain't like them? Did they, no. Like, where were you that they were treating you in a way that made you feel like, I just didn't get it. I wasn't mad at him. I don't want to fight him. I didn't want to yell at him.
I wanted to understand.
I wanted to ask some questions because his complexion isn't as dark as mine or yours, but he's clearly of some African descent. Like, right. You didn't get here from Naples.
But dog, apparently, maybe what happens is if you say something sincerely enough and you say it enough times, you can just make people believe it too.
But... all right, this is the question. There is two possibilities. That he had experiences where it was made clear to him that he's Black and he has blocked them out or chosen, now that he's made it to financial and professional mountaintop where his Blackness is not an issue as often.
Right.
So either he has chosen to forget those or block them out, or they didn't happen.
Yeah.
Is there any other possibility? And I refuse to believe, like, when did he get to the point where he was enough money that his Blackness was not an issue in America as often? So like mid-30s, 40s, something like that?
Great question. Let's just
be generous and say fresh out of college, 22, he was balling. He hit the lotto and was straight. So he expects us to believe, and we'll say from birth till 7, you just are aloof enough to not know what's going on. From 7 to 22 years old, and I'm being generous, Bomani Jones.
Yes.
Nothing happened to him to make him realize that his experience is different. What utopia did he grow up in?
Queens.
I've been to Queens, Bomani Jones. That is not Queens.
Queens of that time period, by the way.
Stop it. Stop it. That is not a progressive borough, my friend.
No, dude, it is the most amazing story in the world, and everybody just feels so awkward and trying to figure out like how to discuss it and how to approach it. And I'm right there with you. I just don't quite. Like, can you tell a story long enough to a person to where they just ride it out? Like, why does everybody keep calling me that?
So maybe this is another possibility. He had some experiences and he was like, nah, this is just what everybody deals with.
But dog, he should be a living, breathing Black history fact.
Yeah, but he don't want to be.
What Black person in the play-by-play space has been as accomplished as Mike Tirico? Mike Tirico has done Monday Night Football. Like all the big events, all the big things that there are to be done, Mike Tirico has done all of them. All of them, right? You do all the golf, right. Every single bit of
Mike
it.
Mike Tirico is a pioneer for Italian Americans, man. I'm I'm proud of him. He's doing great things for the Italian American community, and I hope he continues to do so. I remember the first time I met Mike Tirico, he was doing the Thursday night games in college, ACC Thursday night games, and I was playing at Maryland, and you know, like a couple of star players the night before the game will sit in a room with those broadcasters and like just talk to them so they have some stuff to talk about when the game goes on. And I remember like trying to brother man Mike Tirico and not understanding why
it non-starter.
Why it wasn't working. Where it's like I hear him on the broadcast and I'm like, I feel Mike got to do that for the broadcast. When I see Mike though, when I see him, I'm like, what up, Mike? You good? All right. He's like, hello, sir. I'm like, all right, Mike, hold on. We just chilling, bro. Let's speak in our common tongue, Mike. And it never quite materialized. I was surprised.
So Pablo tried to explain to me once that, like, apparently in New York City, there's a lot of people that are phenotypically similar to Mike Tirico who refer to themselves as being Southern Italian. That's what they ride out, is being Southern Italian. And the thing you got to understand about Europe, though, is when people start talking about Southern Europe, it's always this close to being a slur, right? Yeah. Like, I'm trying to remember who it was that had the quote that said, Africa begins at the Pyrenees. They put in the Spanish and the Portuguese in this. And I've been to both of them places, and that just looked like white folks to me. Like, once it gets to Southern, I guess anywhere the Moors went, right? Anywhere that the Moors showed up, that's where it gets dicey. So, like, Southern Italian apparently is a euphemism that a lot of these cats, like, use to try to, like, get, like, brought into this. But me and Pablo were hanging out with another friend of ours who is a fairly well-known person in our industry, and we told him the Mike Tirico story. I've never in my life seen anybody more incredulous at what he had just been told than he was as we tried to explain to him that Mike Tirico said he wasn't black. And he was just like, Mike Tirico. He's like, the dude on the, you're telling me. And then he pulls it up on the phone. This guy, he wasn't being funny.
Yeah.
He was legitimately trying to come around and make sense of this.
Yeah. I mean, like, I imagine some people probably been listening to these last few minutes getting a good chuckle. I am sincerely not trying to be funny or make a joke out of this. Like, this is something that's really been floating around in my mind, and I knew better than to bring it on the air anywhere until I got to you. But, like, I really do have these questions. And just so I can flex my intelligence for a second, most people attribute that Africa begins in the Pyrenees line to Napoleon. That's something I didn't Google at all while you were talking. I didn't Google that one bit. That was not even, I didn't ask my homie Google because he don't miss.
Dope, David. Look, man, I'm just saying. I mean, them little short dudes, man, they always got a problem with somebody, right?
Isn't he, like, not really short? Isn't that something that...
Really? He wasn't really short?
Yeah.
Let's find out. How tall?
I think so. I think I read somewhere that it was the same way that people just make up nonsense about somebody to, like, denigrate them in current times. Back then, they did the same thing to him. It's like he wasn't necessarily short for the time.
Well, Google's got him at 5'6". And I mean,
what century was that? What was the average height back then?
I don't know, but it says that Louis XVI was 6'4" and George Washington was 6'2".
Okay.
And it says here the average height of a French man in 1800 was 164 centimeters, which is pretty useless for my American ass. Like, I don't really feel like doing the conversion on that right now. I'll get this. 164 centimeters. 164 centimeters. 2 inches. Wow. So here's what we have. It is 5'4.5" would have been the average height.
Give me that.
Wow.
I'm taking that as a win. Just because some other people was oddities and giants, this man was above average height. And they just was picking on him because he couldn't bang in the paint.
Yeah, you know who always be talking about how they above average height? 5'9" dudes. Yeah. That's just all I'm saying, that's just all I'm saying. 5'9" dudes stay talking that I'm of average height.
I'm just saying, if that's what you're going to pick out to mock somebody, that means that it wasn't much mockable. It wasn't much, that much mockable about Napoleon.
Well, I mean, of course, man, he was the gangster of the time, right? Yeah. He was running the block that was Europe, you know? Like, that was his game.
What? You know who? So, someone else who, like, I feel like the Gumbel brothers get hit with some of the Mike Tirico talk by a lot of people. But
wow,
they actually,
unfair.
But, yeah, I was about to say the same thing. It's like, they get hit with it because they put on their broadcaster voice, but... when you actually listen to the things that they are saying and the things that they are all about, them boys bought that life.
Now, I think they got hit for it when Brian Gumbel started doing the Today Show.
Right.
Right. And so once he starts doing the Today Show, that is a very non-threatening space to be in and all of that. And I also think it was compounded by the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, because they used Brian Gumbel as the example of, like, who Carlton Banks wanted to be like. And I'm like, oh, no, those two dudes weren't similar at all. Because, you know, Fresh Prince had all the white writers, so they don't really know. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And so they're just like, oh, Brian Gumbel, that'll be the lame black dude that we point to. And I guess that some people thought he was lame also, but no, Brian Gumbel is gangster with it. There's a whole generation of black sports broadcasters And Brian Gumbel is their OG.
Exactly. No, I am. I don't even necessarily, though I am in sports like media, I don't like, I didn't grow up like saying this is what I want to do. And I didn't like go to college, but I've come to learn. And it's not even like my world like that, but I've come to learn that Brian Gumbel is clearly positioning himself and does not try to distance himself. This is, yeah, I'll leave it at that. Doesn't try to distance himself from us black people in sports media. And the fact that Mike Tirico does, like, again, it doesn't hurt me. Just confuse me. But why?
How? He's got to write a memoir, right?
At some point. And I'm not going to read it because I can't believe it can't be an autobiography. Like, it seems to me that, like, his understanding of his experience is, you can't tell somebody that their truth ain't true. So never mind. I'll take all that back. But I find it so hard to believe. But I went into a wild rabbit hole a couple days ago when I'm watching the game one of the Magic series. And I saw Evan Fournier from two different angles, and I thought it was two different people. And I was like, bruh, I need to know more about Evan Fournier. So I started reading, and he's super interesting background wise. Is like, I think he's French, and his I think he has some North African. One of his parents is North African, and one of his other parents is, I think, it's a Scandinavian place. But anyway, to the point of the Babe Ruth stuff we were talking about, and not necessarily knowing when you look at somebody. I looked at Evan Fournier, and I wanted to know more about him. And there are no English language profiles about this man, but there's enough out there that I was like, this dude, hella interesting. I want to know more about him.
Yo, I saw him the other day, and I got to be honest, I wasn't sure. I thought I knew, and then I saw him, and I thought I didn't. Like, I was not positive, and then I pulled up a picture and was like, yep, could go either way.
It was the craziest thing from two different angles in the same game within seconds, and that's how I ended up in the rabbit hole. I was like, oh, is he? Wait, hold on.
Yeah, but let me tell you this. We not sure watching this. Let me tell you where they know exactly what his get down is. France. In France, I feel like they can look at him and people will immediately start doing the math on that. They drawing them lines.
That is very true. I went into his Instagram too, and I approve of many of his choices. Just leave it at that.
We have wound up in so many of these places.
Yeah, you and I together on anything being recorded. You and I together is awesome. You and I together on things being recorded is interesting as hell, but also close to the line. I know that you are talented enough to get close to those lines and never cross it. I'm not.
Yeah, you think, like really, the Tirico thing, I just feel like we should be able to be confused together. Like, I'm not getting out here with no judgment, none of this stuff. I'm not accusing him of anything. I just got questions.
I'm not the person who sympathizes with people who like rail against cancel culture and whatever that is. I think cancel culture means a lot of different things, and it falls under, and they all get put under the same umbrella. And there's some things under that umbrella that I'm like, that's a problem. There's some things that I'm under that umbrella where I'm like, y'all too sensitive. But I don't rail against it, and I don't necessarily feel bad for people who say some things and get in trouble. But in this situation, I feel like over the course of this show, somebody could clip one or several of the things that were said in here. And fortunately for me, I'm not Bomani Jones. I'm the end friend. I used to mock my homeboys all the time. Like when we go to Vegas or something, I was like, bruh, if this plane crash, it's going to be like Dominique Foxworth and friends lose their life. So in this moment, when some aggregators or whomever pick this up and put a quote out there about how Bomani Jones is going after Mike Tirico, it's going to be like Bomani Jones and friend, and I'm not going to have to deal with the backlash. I'm just the end friend who was along for the ride.
Well, way to make me nervous, Dominique. Like, that's the absolute worst thing you could have possibly said in this moment. Yeah, and now I wonder if he's got to scrap 20 minutes of podcast.
Give the people what they want and need and deserve. I hope that it is up. I'm calling Gabe. I don't do it, Gabe.
I don't know why you think bad things happening to my career will help yours.
It's not going to help either of us, but I mean, oh well. The best thing is both of us are supremely confident and have lots of different talents. So, like, I think that's more the position I'm coming from is like...
Yeah, I hear you, Ann Friend.
I'll be all right.
Yeah, my greatest talent, however, is the things that you can do with me on the first line of the marquee. But really with Tirico, ain't nobody say nothing bad about Tirico. It's just, I just don't know how this happened. And nobody knows how it happened. Like, it's kind of like whenever, I don't know if you were listening when I was trying to figure out what race Dave Aranda was. Mm-mm. Dave Aranda used to be the LSU defensive coordinator. He's now the head coach at Baylor. And I could not, with my eyes, get a great answer on what race he was. And I kept calling people and nobody knew.
Oh, yeah.
I was calling the LSU dudes. Nobody knew, right? One of them had, I think he might be Polynesian. Like, nobody had an answer because Latinos are so rare, right? And, you know, in a lot of spaces in college sports, but nobody had any idea. And everybody was curious. Like, I get on Twitter about Dave Aranda and be like, so does anybody know? That's all I'd say. And it would be all these white folks in the SEC and folks in Baton Rouge be like, we've been trying to figure this out for 3 years. Like, nobody wants to talk about it. Nobody wants to ask about it. Everybody's curious.
All right, do this right now. Google Dave Aranda. Look at that picture. And then I need you to next Google one of my teammates from the Falcons, one of my former teammates, Coy Wire. C-O-Y and Wire spelled like wire.
Gotcha. Oh, my, they're the same guy.
Right?
I don't really know, like, what side is Coy Wire on?
I never asked. I always assumed. Let's see. Huh. Like twins, right?
They do. You are absolutely correct. Wow, they are the same guy. The wiki doesn't say this explicitly, but I feel like his parents, Rick and Jane Wire, his brother Casey is a PGA certified tour professional. Oh, here we go. He's of German, Irish, Dutch, and Japanese descent.
I still
have questions.
There is a hue that is not explained by any of those countries.
But you got it, though. Dave Aranda could have been him, but nobody wanted to ask, what race is Dave Aranda? I didn't seem to get a great handle on it. And then I went back and saw some pictures, like some stories, you know, going back to his days in California, and people were a little bit more explicit in making it clear that he was, in fact, Latino.
I imagine that those stories could be slightly uncomfortable.
Yeah, but I needed to know, as I'm talking about, like, the SEC, I'm like, if the highest paid assistant coach of college football is a black man, I need somebody to tell me. That would be something that was worth noting. And especially in Louisiana, he could have been black. Anybody could be black in Louisiana. Gabe could be black in Louisiana.
New Orleans is quite possibly the most interesting city in the history of America. Speaking of Louisiana, like, I'm working on some stuff that's related to a player from New Orleans, and I've just been reading and learning a ton about New Orleans, and like, that place is bananas and cool and sad and interesting and crazy, and all the people that come out of there are all of those things too.
Yeah, I give you two ways to describe New Orleans. It would be awful if it wasn't so awesome, or it would be awesome if it wasn't so awful.
Well done. That is.
Have you been to Paris?
No.
Okay. New Orleans doesn't make sense until you go to France.
Okay.
Like, once I went to France, I was like, oh, that's why they're like this. Got it. Totally misunderstood.
And it's like, they were like Spanish, under Spanish rule for some point, New Orleans too, right? There's some Spanish influence and French influence. There's Native American influence. There's Afro-Caribbean influence. Then there's just American slave influence in this bananas ass city. And the crazy part is somehow they've managed to maintain all of that. Like, they haven't really assimilated. If you drop in New Orleans, you're not like, hey, this is just like Atlanta.
This is kind of
like New York. It's not like any other city. It is New Orleans.
It ain't like the cities that are close to it in Louisiana.
Yeah. It's most like France in your mind.
Yes. And it has the greatest thing ever produced in this country. The greatest thing this country has ever produced is the accent from black women in New Orleans. It's number one. It's on top of the list. There's nothing better. Like I'd be trying to order your food at Popeyes, and little mama behind the register with all that purple eyeshadow and like four different colors in her hair and everything else. And she talking to you, reading back your order. And all I'm thinking is, take my money, my house and my car. You have it all, whatever you want. And they all flirting with you all the time.
That is the New Orleans vibe. I mean, the accent in general is cool as hell. Like, and they are the one place that has independent, I guess everyone has their own independent slang a little bit. But theirs is unique. Like, the words that come out are just incredible and sound good. And I mean, everyone's aware of like the way they say baby, right? Everyone knows that.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And yeah. But the thing with New Orleans though, boy, the worst of New Orleans.
Oh man.
Is quite possibly the worst of America. Mm. Like just in terms of just being destitute, depraved. Right. Woo, it is. And you from Baltimore, right? Like it ain't like you ain't never seen nothing before.
Not like that.
No. New Orleans, man. And the thing about New Orleans is you'll just be rolling through the Garden District, past the mansions and all that stuff. You make a left and a right, and the next thing you know, you a bit of jizz. You got your block on fire. Like, what are we doing here? How did this happen? How did we get out of this? Man, it's different, man.
Say well.
It's different. And like, I know somebody ain't gonna get you too far. Like my brother used to talk about that. Like he spent a lot of time in New Orleans, a lot of time in Chicago. And he's like, you out there in Chicago, if you got a name, you generally good, right? Like somebody to vouch for you, you straight. That's not gonna get you but so far in New Orleans.
Really? If it's the name from the right ward, I feel like that's always safe.
You would think.
Yeah.
That's the point. You would think.
If I'm in the third ward, that's where Cash Money's from, right? I think most of them. I don't know.
I get them all mixed up. I think the No Limit Cats is like third ward. I think Cash Money Cats are more ninth. Look, don't give me the line, right? It's just all New Orleans to me. I ain't that specific on it. And by the way, all this, I'll bring it back around. It just dawned on me. I know where Tom Brenneman can work if this thing don't work out so well for him. What's that high school where them kids was hanging out at the Lincoln Memorial and the Black Israelites ran up on them?
Oh, yeah. That's in Virginia, right?
That's in Kentucky, right over the line from Cincinnati.
Oh, didn't I heard that dude got paid, too, the boy.
Yeah, they won a lawsuit, and he's speaking at the Republican convention.
Oh, God.
I'm just saying, do they need a play-by-play man? Because I don't feel like this will be a fireable offense for them. Like, if Tom Brenneman has done this, that's the perfect. It'd be like when Hugh Freeze went to Liberty, right? It's the perfect place for him to redeem his soul. And then they can show off the spirit of forgiveness in Christ.
Oh gosh, this is Liberty. What's that? Who wrote that article recently about Liberty?
Joel Anderson.
Yeah, Joel Anderson about Liberty and their black players. That does not bode well if you're trying to build a college football juggernaut. You can't be treating your black players bad.
Let me tell you what else doesn't bode well. Saying we haven't had to test anybody in 2 weeks because nobody has symptoms.
That means you don't read.
Yeah. Like that was, I heard that and I was just like, how's everybody not fired right now?
Yeah, that means you don't read the paper. You don't read nothing. You don't listen to the news. You just, like, everyone knows asymptomatic carriers and that is the problem. This college thing is like, I think you've been really pragmatic about how you cover it and understand the pressures that are on institutions. I'm trying to understand that, given the fact that a lot of us are just like, y'all tripping, you trying to kill these players so you can make some money. And I've enjoyed and appreciated listening to you in that area. But the one thing that crossed my mind is like, how different would the decision-making process be for these presidents, these conference commissioners, if they had the same risk-reward profile as these players or something closer to it? Because I think I understand why the players want to play because, and I don't mean this as like, I tweeted this out and I didn't mean it as like a dunk on them like situation where it's like, what if they had the same situations as the players, then obviously they would choose differently. Because I don't know that that's necessarily true because a lot of players recognize that missing a season could impact their careers long term. So I just wonder if these college administrators, if they didn't stand to gain as much money, and if they also had to go down there after every practice and every game and hug every player who came off the field, how differently they would go about this process.
I am stunned that we got all these conferences that are like, we still gonna do it.
Man.
I just cannot believe it. Like seeing the quotes from the people in the Big Ten and Pac-12, they were like, yo, if you had heard what we heard, there's no way that you would be playing.
And then you put on top of it that, or I guess this also is something that we don't consider. So it's so much easier for us to point at one person who's like the commissioner or point at one person who's running something and be like, man, you don't care about nobody. You're selfish and putting them at risk. But in these cases, most of the time when you're in a high profile position like that, there are people who have more power and influence than you, like in your ear. And I wonder who those people are, because they probably feel a lot more comfortable being like, hey, y'all gonna go ahead with the season, because it's not their name in the paper. And they're not right. The ones who we're all going to come for if something goes wrong. And like, there is, like, the effort needs to be put. Like, if I was one of those commissioners, like, I don't know. I it's easy for us all on the outside to be all high and mighty and principled. I like to think that I would be in those situations also, but maybe not. Maybe it's a different situation.
Well, I mean, my man in the Big Ten said they're going to stand strong, right? Like he said, they just not going to play. And he handled this badly. And I think an underrated part of this that hasn't been discussed enough is that Jim Delaney was probably the most powerful man in college football before he retired. And then they brought in his replacement, and it's Kevin Warren, who hasn't really worked in college sports in his ways. And he didn't handle the messaging correctly. But all them other schools are setting him out there. Like, that's the thing about it, where they're, you know, well, you know, nobody asked us. I don't believe that for a second. Right. I don't believe he said that the vote was overwhelming. I absolutely believe him when he said that, because we all heard that.
Right.
Right. Like, you know, I think Dan Patrick came out there and said what he said. But independent of him, I know what I was told the vote was. I know what the margin was. I know what the schools were who voted no. Like, come on, man. Y'all know this is a bad idea. Y'all just got to look like y'all doing everything y'all can to keep up this bad idea. And Justin Fields, I don't know what he's doing, right? Like, he confuses me as much as anybody else in this, because he's decided he's going to be the guy out front in this. And he got this lawyer putting a battery in his back. And I'm just like, nah, man, let somebody else have this fight.
I don't think, like, the human mind is built to, like, categorize people. And I find myself trying to catch myself where it's like, man, the players are the smartest in this situation. The players are most thoughtful in this situation. When actuality, some players are, some players aren't. And I find myself being like, the administrators are vile and selfish and are throwing caution to the wind with these people's lives. And I would say some of them probably are, some of them probably aren't. It's like, I need to do a little more work to figure out who, but I think instinctively, it's just in our nature to be like, you know what? If you see some sharp fangs and some stripes, that's probably a tiger. Right. You need to get away. And I find myself being like, oh, and if you see some long ears and something hopping, then that's dinner. You better go catch it. But in this situation, there are sharks and rabbits. I didn't think this metaphor through all the way. I should have done a little better.
Yeah, but you're doing all right.
But you get the point. There are sharks and rabbits on both sides.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man. You think the NFL is going to be able to keep this going?
Nah. Well,
I think they will.
I guess to keep it going, I think you're probably right. They'll have a season. I guess looking at baseball is what I'm thinking. Like, will it be smooth? No. One of the things the NFL benefited from all this time is that no one really knows or cares about most of the players.
Yeah.
The NBA could only survive in a bubble situation, because if you lose five guys, then the NBA is nothing. In the NFL, you could lose 15 guys off every single team and no one would care necessarily, as far as like, oh, I'm not gonna watch now because they down two offensive linemen, a linebacker, a safety, and a wide receiver and two running backs. Like, nah, nobody, everyone's still tuning in. But go ahead.
Are they gonna be able to keep people close enough to the facility to stop them from getting sick? I guess is what the question becomes. And I guess that's where I think they're going to play. And I guess it's just because I've grown so cynical and I just look at their dedication to doing so, to be like, they're going to be able to, even though I looked at baseball, I was like, this has no chance. I've been surprised that training camp has gone as smoothly as it has for the NFL. I think maybe that's the part that's lulling me into believing they can do it.
Yeah, I think they can do it. I think they can finish the season. Will they go without having issues? Like, I think that's foolish. They'll absolutely have issues. People will test positive. There will be some stars that we lose, but they have the good fortune of having a union to agree to things with, and they can had the opt-out period for the players, whereas they can wipe their hands of any type of bad press. Like, for the season to stop, you're gonna have to get several teams, like, be a crazy outbreak,
right?
And I think it's unlikely that we'll have something like that. And I guess it's also out of their control, because, like, if the country descends into, like, we hit flu season and the country descends into some crazy outbreak across the country, like, it's going to touch football too, because they are not isolated.
This is so upsetting. I don't even know what word I just said.
Upsetting.
It was like a combination. Yeah, I don't think I was going for absurd or insane. Okay. I hadn't decided which one I was going with. But either way, like, I feel like we're just kind of trafficking in the same space. Like, they're going to try to pull this off. And, I mean, good for them if they do. Cause let me tell you something, Jack. I don't know what the rest of us going to do without it. And I mean, like, me and you.
Yeah, I know exactly like what us. You mean. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Like, that. We are under no illusion that...
we in this together, baby. Yeah. I'm gonna be treating these dudes like we talk about the firemen, man. Like these first responders out here helping us maintain our way of life.
That's the truth. Like that's the crazy thing about people saying that that some in the media don't want it to work, or like so that they can be right. Like, no, we all want it to work, but also like there's some realities that you cannot dodge. You can't just live in some bubble.
Do they know how much easier work has been now that we got some games to talk about?
My God. I, like, you know how some people, like, go running in a weight vest or something? Like, that's what that period was. Like, we was all outside running in a weight vest in 100-degree weather with a gas mask on and ankle weights and a parachute trying to make a show every day when ain't nothing happening. And like and now we got some stuff to talk about. Like, man, thank you for taking it off.
Yeah, you think I'm mad about it? You think I want them to stop this? No.
Give it.
Keep it cracking.
Please. Once football comes, because we've been talking about football, especially on Get Up. Like, Get Up seems to be more football focused than basketball focused, and they've picked up on the basketball now that the playoffs have started. But they were like, hey, so what we got? The producers went from coming with a bunch of topics to try to get your opinion on it to be like, hey, what you thinking? Got any ideas, predictions? You want to do a list? How about we do a top five list? People love lists. I'm like,
yo,
hey.
Anytime the producers are coming with like anything you got in mind, that's your job. I don't do that. Like, yeah. I mean, not this, like, Gabe, this is totally different, but like TV producers?
Yeah.
Nah, man, tell me what you think, and I tell you what I think about it. They're like, I did tell you what I thought.
Yeah,
I didn't tell you.
It all brought us all to the same responsibility, where it's like, hey, we in this together. Everybody got a row. Grab a oar. I don't know what's happening, but like, you got to come up with ideas. Maybe I got to go live on air. Like, I don't know what's happening. We all got to do something, because right now, these are unprecedented times. Unprecedented.
We have no idea what we are doing. Oh, snap, man. Dominique Foxworth. Check him out. Undefeated.com. Anything else you want to tell the people about?
Nope.
Okay, that'll work. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. Gabe Bassan and Tarika Foster handle everything behind the scenes. Thank you. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us. Review us. Give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And also, by the way, I am going on vacation next week. It's also my birthday. We can talk about that when I get back. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.